Okay, well, we're going back to Zion. I think we began Zion. Haruach Avero Shechata. If he says, sees his chaver in a sin, or Sheholach B'derech Votava, or he's gone off on the bad path, which means that even though, there's two things, even though the person has not necessarily committed an Avera, but his way of life is on the wrong track, so to speak. Mitzvah lachzir l'mutav. It is a mitzvah to bring him back to the good. Okay. That's the principle of Kol Yisrael Arevim tell us that. That all Jews have responsibility one for another. And we explained how that fits into the concept of L'sisna. I'm sure we did so. That would be, on a philosophical level, to stand idly by, and while another person is destroying his own soul, would be a form of hatred. Again, we said there are two types of hatred. There's a personal, emotional hatred, and then there's an indifference towards the plight of another human being. And that type of hatred would include, even if it's impersonal, that it would include an absence of the feeling of responsibility. That is to say that you wouldn't care that the person was living in a manner which would be destructive to his soul. So the perfected person who's in line with the will of God is concerned to have a good relationship, you know, with his friends, with his fellow Jews on a personal level, and also in terms of being their friend on a philosophical level. You have an obligation to be somebody's friend on a philosophical level. And all this is included in the mitzvah of Hocheach Tochiach Et HaMisecha. That is to say that there's an obligation to rebuke. So that's but most people don't have this attitude. Most people have the attitude that rebuke is something unpleasant. It's something alien to friendship. In fact, as I said, most people seek out that the people that they seek out to be friends are those who really would not rebuke them. That's how emotional friendships work. You're seeking somebody who's a friend in the sense that he'll support you on the emotional level. That is, each person has a subjective view of the situation in which he favors his own position, and against the objective evidence. So therefore, when he gets into a conflict, he's not interested in hearing about objective reality. Most people have a negative reaction to any type of criticism. So therefore, they turn to a friend. The friend is usually someone who more or less understands them. That's what they mean by understands them. That is, their own slanted view of reality. And Chazal said quite the opposite, that the true love must carry with it rebuke. Eis ha-shayyah ha-varashem yochiyach. That's the way of God. Eis ha-shayyah ha-varashem. The fact that God rebukes us, that God chastises the Jews through the prophets, is an expression of love. The true expression of love is chastisement. You have to understand that. Just the opposite. Everything is just the opposite as the way people would imagine it. People imagine when somebody criticizes them, in fact, you're very hesitant. You don't like to, you know, you always have to give about 20 apologies before you offer any type of a criticism. Because you know, you sense that the other person is not going to take to it. However, the perfected person welcomes rebuke. But rebuke is a true sign of love. It is to say that you're willing to risk that personal friendship that you have for the sake of conveying to the person extremely important information, which may be painful to him, but which is necessary to him. So that would be, a person who failed to rebuke in the Torah would be like a doctor who sees another person as an ailment, and he refuses to offer treatment because he knows it's going to cause them a momentary pain. And at that moment of momentary pain, that individual will not have the same attitude of love towards him. And because of the unwillingness to endure that, he withholds the treatment. That would be akin to a parent, in line with the, you know, talks that we've been having on Sunday. That would be in line with a parent who could not, a person who can't, you see, it affects you on every level of your life. If you cannot do this, if you can't offer a rebuke when it's necessary, then you can't be a proper friend, and you can't be in any relationship, you can't function properly, and you can't be a proper parent for sure. That was the criticism of David. Even a great man like David was criticized because he did not cause his son to be depressed by rebuking him. So all of that would be a weakness. On the other hand, and it would also be lacking in true love. A true friend would be one who is really concerned for the well-being of the other person, even if the other person will not acknowledge him in return, even if the other person will dislike him. As a true doctor, the true doctor would give the correct treatment, even if the patient wouldn't recognize it as such and would be upset with him. But he has to go by what his knowledge dictates is good for the other person. Okay. Now, he says like this, Amachiach es chavero, one who rebukes his chaver, Bein v'dvarim, shebeino v'veino. You know, he includes both categories. Whether it be regarding matters that are concerning the two of them, some personal insult, offense, Bein v'dvarim, shebeino v'veino makom, or whether it be concerning matters that are between him and God. Now, Torah Chlosicho Beino Leveinatma. Let's analyze the difference. The Rambam is giving us instructions now on the methodology, so to speak, of review. There are certain requirements. First of all, it has to be private. Chlosicho Beino Leveinatma. It has to be private. Let's have a private chat. Okay? Vidavala Benacha Ubulashan Racha. And you should speak to him calmly, in a soft manner. The Odio, that's two things we've learned so far. The Odio, and he should inform him, She'eno Omelo, Elo Tovato. But he's only saying it for his benefit. Lahavio, Lachai Olam Haba. In order to bring him into the life of the world to come. Alright? Well, let's read the rest of the Rambam, then we'll go back and we'll analyze it. Im kibel minenu mutav. If he accepts it from him, so it's good. Im lav, and if not, yochichenu pam shnia ushlishes. If not, he should rebuke him a second time and a third time. Vechein tamid, and more than that, constantly, chayev adam lochicho. The obligation remains in effect, even after two and three times. To rebuke him, achiyakehu achote, until the sinner, in other words, he's part of his being rebuked, hits him. Well, I don't know if he means literally hits him, but he's likely, he's annoyed with him.
He's back or something like that?
Yeah, let's say I'm rebuking you, and you refuse to accept it. Yeah. I'm supposed to continue doing so until you're ready to hit me. No. Okay.
Of course,
we have to use our judgment, obviously. It doesn't mean literally. If I see, it's just an expression of a certain attitude that you're just not going to listen. And he says, Eini shomea, I'm not listening. So, that includes, I don't think we have to take those words literally, that it would be, you have to use your seichel here. It wouldn't make sense to learn it that way. And then he says another thing, V'chol she'ef she'biyado limchos, v'eino mocha. And whoever has the capacity to protest, and he does not protest, who nitfas bavon elo, he is ensnared in this sin. He sort of becomes a party to the sin, an accessory to the crime. Kevin she'epshalo lived close to him, since he had the capacity to protest them. Okay, now let's go back and review what we did, starting with the instructions that the Rambam gave us. First of all, we should ask the question, why is it necessary for the Rambam to give us instructions on how to cure? This is a book of halacha. So the halacha is, tells us our obligations, but to how to carry them out, I would imagine that should be left to us. Why does the Rambam see fit to give us instructions? But then on the instructions themselves, the first thing was that it has to be done privately. And then the second one was that he has to speak to him benachas, calmly, in the soft language. And the third one was that he has to inform him that he's only doing it for his benefit. And he has to bring into the discussion that he's doing it for the sake of bringing him into the world to come. Okay, what questions would you pose over here? We're talking We're not talking about a case where you know that he's not going to accept it. Moshe raises that issue. If it's a case where it's clear that the person is not going to accept it, then you don't have to rebuke him. So the individual has to be defined. That's a good point. The individual must be defined as someone who is subject to Zohar. He's an individual who is capable of receiving a rebuke. If it's a person, and we all know such people, that you can't talk to them, so then you're free of the obligation. You're free of the obligation because it's just the way it wouldn't be rebuked. Rebuke by definition must have a party to which it relates. Now, since the person, but that doesn't mean to say that he definitely will accept it. You see? So therefore there is a ma'isa mitzvah of rebuke. Now the ma'isa mitzvah of rebuke presupposes that there be a party to whom this can be addressed. Does that mean that the party necessarily will accept it? No. But the fact that he won't accept it doesn't mean that he wasn't a party of rebuke. You understand? However, if he should be defined as someone who is beyond rebuke, so then you don't rebuke him because it's not considered rebuke anymore. Okay, that's a good point. But the Rambam there is talking about someone about whom you don't know. You're saying there is a possibility if I speak to him that he'll listen. There's also a possibility he won't. I mean, that's because we assume that a person has free will. The underlying obligation comes from the fact that your love of God, that you cannot, as we said before, your love of God demands that you have a certain attitude of responsibility towards each fellow Jew. Okay? You can't be indifferent to the plight of a fellow Jew. You can't be in a state of hatred. But, first of all, he mentions that he has to do it privately. I would ask, well what else? Why does the Rambam have to tell me that? Isn't that pretty obvious? Why would I think that we should do it otherwise? We should do it publicly. That seems to be, of the things that he's mentioning, the most obvious. When you want to tell somebody, when you want to rebuke somebody, you of course don't want to embarrass the person or make it extremely difficult for him to deal with it. So the best thing is to do it privately. You could say the same thing. In other words, you could say the same thing about Benachar. The third thing I'm not so sure about. The third thing I could see. The third thing that you should tell him that you're doing it for his benefit and that you're doing it to bring him into the world to come, that should be analyzed. That's already maybe not so obvious. Although on the other hand, it's not that. That's something that I think a rational person would think of too. But the first two seem to be pretty obvious. And the Rambam doesn't point out, right? Whatever the Rambam tells us is important. It's not so simple. It's not so obvious. So I would see if we can understand that. Let's work on that to start with. I just mentioned at this point, the Rambam doesn't mention this. But I think that it emerges. You study the Rambam is telling us there's one fundamental principle over here, and that is that this is an unusual kind of a mitzvah. Because normally a mitzvah means more or less a technical act that you have to do. Of course, there are different levels of involvement that you can have, but as long as you perform the act properly, you fulfill the mitzvah. You put the tefillin on in the morning, properly, and you recite the blessing, you put the tefillin on, and you fulfill the mitzvah. It's pretty cut and dry. The same would be true with most mitzvahs. Even matzah and Passover, and of course, the greater the degree of his mental involvement, the greater the fulfillment, but the mitzvah is a mitzvah. Here there's a mitzvah of rebuke, and it does not lend itself to a simple technical performance, as other than, in other words, I have a mitzvah, do it, I'll go over to you and I'll say, you sinned against yourself by violating that law of the Torah. That's it, I fulfilled my mitzvah, I can walk away. It's a different type. You see, the reason why the Rambam goes in, he's brought into this, why this becomes part of halacha, is because here the manner in which you do it is not just an additional level of fulfillment, but it actually defines whether what you're doing is a mitzvah of rebuke or you're just going through some motions which have no halachic validity at all. Okay? Because as we said, in order for this to constitute rebuke, certain elements are required. You have to have, first of all, an individual as a party is an object of rebuke. But the framework has to be a framework in which there's the capacity for Kabbalah, for acceptance of the rebuke. So you have to establish the environment. Now, then it raised, once the Rambam can't give you all the factors on this. That's why he's giving you the basics, to teach you this concept. But it's not that obvious. It is not that obvious, because the truth of the matter is, you'll see in most of your relationships, I'd say people in general, most people in general, when they seek to criticize, even mildly criticize, they usually fail. In various, amongst friends, unless they really study the matter carefully, with children, with spouses, and so forth, very often you thought it's like a very simple point, and I was very gentle about it, and yet it's not accepted. They're not listening. Or with workers, with co-workers, you know, if you're in that situation, with employees, if you're a boss, you just... And you think that you are a reasonable person, and you have to convey something which, and you're just in a very reasonable way, it just wasn't accepted. So, Ben raises a good point. Timing. The Rambam didn't mention timing. But timing is very important. You see that in Pirkei Avos, that it says that you shouldn't try to pacify a person in his moment of anger. So I shared a reference to that on Sunday morning with regard to children. You know, when a person's in a... when a person has lost his temper, and of course you would like to calm... you want to help, you want to calm down, but you realize that for a certain period of time, he just is not in a state of... to talk to him would make it only worse. Would make the situation only worse. So you have to allow the person to vent his anger, and once he vents his anger, then he begins to calm down. At that point in time, you can possibly talk to him. That's true. That's a good point over here. The timing is important. The Rambam doesn't talk about that. He takes that for granted, that you've waited for the proper time. But then he says that it has to be done, three things. It has to be done privately, and it has to be done in the proper tone of voice, and you have to tell them why you're doing it. Now, what is the underlying idea behind that? Well, wouldn't I know these things? Why is it necessary to tell me that? There must be a reason for that. The reason, as Avi and Bera say, the reason is because it's difficult to perform this principle properly, and it's difficult to convey what you want to the other person, because the motivation that's affecting you really determines whether it'll be done properly or not. Now, there is always present, there's always going to be present, no matter what, whether it's because you've been personally offended. That same emotion will be there in both cases. If you've been personally offended, so of course you have an emotional desire to get back at the person. So that's what you have to be on guard against. Now clearly, if you have that emotion, that's going to come through. And unless you're dealing with someone who's at a very high level, if you're dealing with the average person, you have to understand why it's difficult for the person to accept rebuke. Now, if he perceives it as an attack, so it's going to lose its effect. It's very difficult. Well, we'll go into that, why it's difficult for people to accept criticism and the proper way to criticize. But the first thing you have to do is to examine your own motivation and to free yourself of that emotion. That's why the Rambam is saying is, yeah, it's not just a simple thing that it's done privately. Of course, it doesn't mean to say you're going to get up. The Rambam is not coming to tell us you shouldn't get up in front of a whole group. No, but privately means totally privately. There's always... if you have this desire to get back, then you won't be that careful, and there could be somebody else around that can hear it, or you'll raise your voice. You see? Because you really want to hurt the person, and you really want other people. So if you want to hurt the person, so then you want others to see, you want others to know. Therefore, it's very important to make sure that it's completely private. That's the first thing. That you should not be careless about that. Now the second thing is that it's a very important point. that a person, the way you speak, see, all this indicates you could say the right thing, but the message can come through differently depending upon your tone of voice. So that's why he says you have to speak to him calmly, and you have to speak in soft terms. Again, it means that you've freed yourself from any inclination to get back at this person or to put the person down. And the third thing that he mentions is, this is interesting, why do you have to tell him that he's only saying it for his benefit? He's only saying it for his benefit, and to bring him into the life of the world to come. The first part I understood. The second one, I mean, why did you say that you're only saying it for his benefit? What do you have to bring him into the world to come? What do you have to mention that for? There's a setting. What you see emerging from this is that rebuke, in order for it to be successful, see, again, it requires a certain perfection in order to perform this properly. You really got this for benefit, so you really have to free yourself of any selfish motivation. If there's a selfish motivation, it's not going to work, because the other person will sense that you're not doing it. If the other person senses that you're doing this to vent your own anger, even if you're very clever about it, and you make it seem like you're doing it for his benefit, then you won't accept it. Because each person has a difficulty admitting that he has a weakness, so therefore he has a certain defensiveness. Now, if he senses that you're trying to exploit that weakness to tear him down, then he's going to resist. He's going to close up. So that's why it's got to be apparent to him that you're really concerned about his welfare, his benefit. Then he might listen to you. That's an important thing. See, that's an important thing, again, in all relationships with the teachers, students, and so forth, is that a person has the capacity to accept criticism, to listen to it, to the instruction, and to admit he made a mistake, but that's only if he's convinced that the other person is really interested in his benefit. Such a person he will embrace, because that's why he brings in the factor of Olam Haba. For two reasons. First of all, it's got to be you have to make clear to him the significance. It's not a trivial thing. That the underlying motive, the importance, it's got to be in his mind's eye. You're doing it for his benefit, but what benefit are we talking about? The ultimate benefit. Each person is concerned about it. You're not diluting the message either. You don't want to dilute the message either, you know, like it's the trivial thing. What difference does it make? Well, after all, what's the underlying importance of the whole thing? And so you have to bring that into the picture, that it's not a trivial thing. You're not doing it for trivial reasons. There's big stakes over here. That's very important for the person to know, and you have to bring that before his mind's eye, that the stakes are extremely important. Now, that is to say, I'm really talking in terms of your perfection, in terms of your neshama, and that's the ultimate. That's the ultimate existence. So that's the reason why the Rambam mentions these three things. They may be obvious to a rational person, but generally speaking, in this area, a person is irrational, because when he confronts another person who's sinned against him, he's coming into the situation with certain emotions. If those emotions were allowed to work themselves out, then it would probably fail. There's one more point that I want to mention along these lines. Now, since we're dealing with the subject of rebuke, I think there are two reasons why a rebuke is difficult and why it fails. And if you're aware of this, then I think it could make it a lot easier. The first one is the one that we've just mentioned. That is that you've got to divest yourself of the emotion. You have to be aware of the emotion to put the person down. That you're gaining some ego satisfaction in being in this position, that you are criticizing him. If that comes through, then then the person will sense that, and then it's an ego clash, and he's going to resist. That's what the Rambam is communicating to us over here. But there's another point, which is illustrated in the blessings which Yaakov gave to his children. I want to point that out. It's in Parshas Vayechi. Jacob, before he died, he blessed his children. But if you read the blessings, you see that some of them are pretty harsh. Pretty harsh blessings. Specifically, with regard to Shimon and Levi. And he pointed out to them that they had anger, that they had a defect. I mean, he used very harsh language. It's supposed to be a blessing. And this is in 49, verse 7, it says, Aror apam ki oz, cursed is their anger, for it is mighty. So he curses their anger. That's interesting. How is it? This is supposed to be a blessing. Well, first of all, you see it's a rebuke. Here he's rebuking them. So first of all, you see that what the definition of a blessing is. A criticism can be the greatest blessing. For people who are on a very high level, for suspected people, this type of information, this critique, was a blessing, because it makes them aware of this defect, and it enables them to perfect themselves. That's what a blessing is. But Rashi points out very interesting. He points out something very interesting. But it says, cursed is their anger. Now, what does Rashi say? Cursed is their anger, for it is mighty. So Rashi points out something interesting. Even at the moment of rebuke, lo kileil, he did not curse, elo esapa. He only cursed their anger. Which means he didn't curse them, he cursed their anger. Well, what's Rashi trying to tell us there? Wait a minute, but that's, you tell it to a person, you tell it to a person, you criticize, that's, you know, I'm not criticizing you, I'm just criticizing your personality, you know, I'm just criticizing your anger. Well, there's a point to be made over here, though. Yes, I'm talking about a very, very subtle point. I think one of the reasons why people are shut out, why they're afraid of criticism, is because there's a very thin line. We have a sense of ourselves, you know, what your essence, your person, what you are. Each person has a certain sense of himself, and he wants to feel good about himself. And he realizes that he has certain defects. But in his own mind, he makes a distinction. He says, that's not the real me. I mean, all right, I got angry yesterday, so I partake of anger, but the real me is a good guy. You see? Now, the reason why a person is stung by a criticism, why does it bother them so much? If somebody else says, you know, you're a vicious person, you know, something like that. Why does that bother you so much? It's because you take that as being a definition of your essence. And you can't tolerate that that's your essence. You see what I'm saying? In other words, as long as the person endorses your essence, that you're a good person, essentially you're good, but you partake of a certain characteristic, and that characteristic is neither good nor evil, it depends on how you use it, but then a person can hear. That's why Rashi's pointing out the methodology that Yaakov used. That's why they were able to accept it. He used very harsh terminology. Cursed is your anger. The way he expressed it, they were able to accept it, because he endorsed them that you're righteous people. Your essence is really good. However, you should be aware, I'm bringing to your mind's eye, the fact that you do partake of this characteristic, which if you're not aware of it, will detract from your perfection, and will, to the extent that it detracts from your perfection, will diminish, so to speak, your share in the world to come. So that's an extremely important point. And all of this is included in what the Rambam is saying. That when the person, two things, that the person senses that you're not doing it for any ego gratification, and you're doing it purely for his sake, and secondly, that it must be clear to the person that you're not defaming his essence. If you're making a statement in a manner which relates, this is very good in all different areas of human relations. Stop and think, you'll see. Stop and think before you talk to a person. If you want to communicate certain things, of course, you know, every situation, you have to use seichel in every situation.
But if you bear these general rules in mind, what is the, put yourself in the other person's situation, what's the best way to communicate this? And people do not take the time to do that. They don't take the time to do that because they also they feel, why should I? He sinned against me, so why should I waste any time? It's enough that I'm going to tell him. See, once you're doing that, you're not doing the mitzvah tachach. The mitzvah tachach is a mitzvah. The man should take the proper time, like anything else. You can't just say, well, that's it. I don't owe him. It's enough that I'm telling him. I don't owe him the time and effort to think through how to communicate with you. You do. You do. Well, that's part of a hochei tochiyach, has to be an expression of love. So, if you stop and think what this person's emotions are and how he's going to likely react, then you can frame it in a way where the person does not feel assaulted. If the person doesn't feel assaulted, then they can listen and they can even appreciate it. Alright, now if you're dealing with a person that is so insecure or so defensive that they can't take any type of thing, there are people like that, then that's an individual who's not a proper object of rebuke, and there the missile wouldn't deploy. But there's a tremendous amount of insight into this. Just in learning how to perform this mitzvah properly, it will benefit you in many, many areas, all different kinds of relationships. And once you master this technique, because it's almost impossible to have any kind of relationship that doesn't carry the need for criticism, so to speak. So that's why this is important. It's part of the halacha. It's part of the halacha because it defines what constitutes the mitzvah tachach. You see that you cannot just do the act of rebuke, but you have to be committed to the result. In rebuke, it's not just that I have an obligation. See, that's why I'm not going to tell you that, because you might think that, okay, I fulfilled my mitzvah. My mitzvah was to do an act of rebuke. I would think that should be sufficient. The fact that the Rambam says I have to keep coming back to the person until he just says, I don't want to listen to you anymore, that's the chiddush. Because why should I have to keep doing that? I thought you sinned, I did what I had to do, the rest is up to you. But apparently in this mitzvah, you've got to be, as long as the person remains in that state, you have to be committed to achieving the result, as long as it's possible, until it becomes clear that it's impossible.
How do you know?
Okay, so, Tosfos have a gotten Rishati. Let's review it. So, the problem over here was that the individual drank from the cup, apparently drank wine before the Mavarach was telling. So Tosfos asks, does this contradict what we learn in Shlosh Shachu, where we say, Ein HaMesug Marashayim Lutom HaChiyitam HaMavarach, that when people are gathered together at a meal, that one person makes a brach of all of them, so they're not allowed to eat until the Mavarach is telling. So there's a contradiction over it, right? So Tosfos answers, his first answer is, that Dafka Bahamotzi, Shatarach Lechol, that this is only by Hamotzi, where the individual is obligated to eat, because you have any repair for Ubezdin. Well, you first Adam Prusali Orchin, Elim Kano Fulimayan. That a person cannot make a bracha and give out food for the Orchim unless he's eating together with them. Hilka Tsarach Lahamtin, Ashiyutam Hamavarach. Therefore, they are obligated to wait until the Mavarach is telling. I will kiddush ein chovel b'shtos l'mavarach ein tzarach l'hamtin. That's Tosfos' first answer, that the determining factor as to whether the other people at the table can eat prior to the Mavarach depends upon whether the Mavarach atzmo is obliged to eat or not. If he's obliged to eat, then they cannot eat before him. If he's not obliged to eat, then they can. Now the question is, what does that have to do with it? Okay?
Uh-oh. All right. Then the Rambam says, in the middle of Zion, in Kibel Vimeno Luto, if he accepts it from him, so it's good. V'yemlav Yochichenu Pam Shniu Shlishis. And if not, he should rebuke him a second and a third time. What seems to be redundant, of course, is the word, if he accepts it from him, so then it's good. That seems to be redundant. Of course, we're subjecting the Rambam to a very intense scrutiny of every word, which might not be fair, but Asking the Elijah with the Rambam indicates that every word was chosen carefully, and we have a right at least to try to ask the question. Or if we can't answer it, there's something wrong. I mean, the Rambam is expressing a point. But if we can find some meaning even in this, in these words, then, you know, that would certainly help us. I would tell you that if he accepted it from him, is good. Is telling you that that is the objective of Machacha. That is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to cause the other person to accept the Machacha. And it's not, as you might think, that simply you're obligated to do an action of the view. There's two parts to the mitzvah. One is for you to do the action, but it is not complete until the other person accepts. Once he accepts it, so then it's good. And you might think, well, one second, he may have accepted it and not changed. That's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. See? So there are two points that you should avoid. It's not sufficient merely to do an activity of the view. The other individual must accept it. And B, that is sufficient. Once he accepts it, you're not obligated any further. It doesn't mean he can act on it.
Mm-hmm.
He can change or not change. That's now up to him. Your obligation was to give him the opportunity to exert his bechira by making him aware of the mistake. That's why he says in Kibel Mimen and Wuto. Not, then he should rebuke him a second and third time. Because that makes sense, because he has not as yet fulfilled his mitzvah. V'chein tamid. And then, what is v'chein tamid? It's interesting. It's kind of interesting the way he expresses this, because it's not a second and a third time, it turns out. It's continuous. There's no quantity over here. How many times am I obligated to repeat a rebuke? So he says, Chaim Thomas. Well, if that's the case, then why did he say a second and a third time? See, again, you could ask the redundancy question. But the Rambam should have said like this: if he accepted from him, then it's good. And if not, he's obliged to rebuke him continuously. He'd go right into the continuously until right. The other person is prepared to hit him, or something like that.
Right.
But first he pauses and says a second and a third time. And then he says, after that, the chain coming. It would appear that there's some difference between the second and third time and what ensues. Okay? That would appear to be the case. But what exactly the difference is not so obvious. I'm going to suggest a possibility. Bear in mind that the mitzvah of tzachacha relates to two different types of situations. One is where it's a personal grievance, and one where the person has sinned against God. Okay? Now take a look. He says, V'chein tamid, chayev adam l'chicho, ad sheyakeh hachote, the sinner. Now is this talking about who is the sinner over here? Is this which one is it talking about? Perhaps he means like this, that there's a difference, that in the case of a personal situation, so then you have to rebuke him, right? And then a second time and a third time. And that's it. Because that's a personal situation. So either he's going to make up with you or he's not going to make up with you. After two or three times, after the third time, it's obvious that he's not going to listen. But, and then perhaps you fulfilled your obligation. But where the person is a sinner against God, where he's a sinner against God, so then it's not just an obligation to rebuke him the first time and the second time. That's a different thing. Then it's a continuous situation. Because at any point he might accept it and return to God. Where it involves his relationship, where the basis of the rebuke is because of his relationship with God, it's an ongoing thing. It doesn't cease until he actually is prepared to assault you. He rejects you as a rebuker. But perhaps where it's a personal grievance, so therefore you've been insulted, you've been offended, and you're trying to bring it to his attention. So if you failed once, you do it a second time, you do it a third time. But after that, perhaps you're free of the obligation. And therefore the Rambam made a distinction between the two. Because in the second case, he refers to this until the sinner, the chote. But why would the term chote, unless you want to say that chote means the one who sinned against you, but other than that, he just says chote, the sinner. Now, the only time that term would be appropriate, universally appropriate, would be where he sinned against, you're rebuking him because he sinned against God. not because he sinned against you. Because he sinned against you doesn't mean he's a sinner. It just means that he hurt your feelings. That doesn't mean he's a sinner. But you understand that. That the situation where I'm rebuking you because of a personal thing, you know, that doesn't mean you did a sin. I expected more out of you, you know what I mean? You were going into town anyways, and you didn't bother to give me a ride, etc. That's not a sin. That's a personal thing. I mean,
I thought all of this was about committing sins and walking in a way that's not good.
No, but then we're going back. I made that point, that the paragraph Zion 7 over here, the mitzvah of rebuke now, it seems to me, is dealing with all cases where you have, there are two cases where you have to rebuke. One is because of personal, and one is because of objective sin. You see? Right? Although you want to say that Zion, Hocheh is speaking only? No, I'm saying that here he includes, I hear your point, here he includes the obligation to rebuke even when he didn't sin against you. Okay? Now he says, Hamochiach et chavero. Oh, take a look. One who rebukes his fellow. Bein b'dvarim shebein ol leveino. Bein b'dvarim shebein ol leveino makom. Right? So now when he's talking about rebuke, he's talking about both categories.
Right.
So perhaps the reason for the breakdown is the second and third time, that's with reference to where it's between me and you. That's it. It doesn't make sense to keep going on forever about these types of things. It's forgotten after the second and third time. It's clear that he doesn't regard it in the same light that I do. Okay? However, where it's between him and God, so that's why he can't just reject it. So therefore you have a right to just wait for the opportunity. Maybe he'll do tshuva next week. Until he's prepared to assault you, in which case it's clear that he's not going to assault you. You need that. In other words, what I'm suggesting is that if it's personal, so then two or three times is sufficient indication that he's not listening to you. However, when the sin is between him and God, then no, that's not the case, and that there you need an overt demonstration that he's rejecting you as a rebuker. You can dispute that and say that the Rama means that the obligation of continuous rebuke is on both cases. And by chote, he does not mean the objective sin. And then you're left with the question of why did he structure it this way? You could say that. Amochiyach es chavero tchila, the one who rebukes his friend, tchila, this is to begin with, the beginning?
The outset.
At the outset, that's good. Lo yidaber lo kashos, he shouldn't speak harshly with him, ad sheyachli menu, to the extent that he embarrassed him. Shenemer, as it says, v'lo sisa olav chet, that you should not carry a sin because of him. Which means, this teaches us something very, very interesting. There's no simple course in Yahadah, even in the course of performing the mitzvah, because what you're engaged in over here is a mitzvah. You always have to be on guard. One thing that emerges, he's not stating this explicitly, but it's an important point, and that is that he always has to be on guard. A person, you know, we know that a person, we're told to be on guard in a situation, you know, where we're indulging our instincts, when we're involved in eating and drinking and different activities. That you understand, right? That you should be on guard. But you don't have the same attitude when you're engaged in doing something which is a mitzvah. The person assumes a different attitude because there you have a certain emotion of righteousness. And this emotion can get you into just as much trouble. So therefore, even in the performance of a mitzvah, you have to be very careful. Now he says that you shouldn't speak harshly until, to the extent that you embarrass him, because then you're involved in this thing. Now that the person wouldn't think that way, he would assume that he had the right to rebuke him. It's part of rebuking him. So if the person, if he suffers embarrassment as a result of that, that's not my problem. The answer is no. But there's two things over here. You have a right to rebuke, and he's still a fellow Jew, and insofar as he's a fellow Jew, you have no right to rebuke him. Kacham v'chacham, thus the Chacham said, Yochol atam halchicha u'panam mishtano. Even the rabbis went so far as to prove this point on the basis of a scriptural proof. you might think that you can rebuke him, and his face, you know, turns, color, because it's embarrassing. You might think that.
Well, do you?
That you're allowed to do it. What's the basis for such thinking? Is there such a basis? I mean, you see, if the Chacham go to the extent of a house, like a Havamina, and they see fit to reject it, it means they're treating that idea seriously. But it's conceivable that a person could argue that way. What would the argument be?
You might think that you're not permitted to admire someone. That's simply because you're doing so for the sake of base motive. You derive some pleasure out of the other person's embarrassment. Of course, that's prohibited. But in the course of something which is a mitzvah, you're doing it for the sake of bringing him to tshuva. So you might think that in that situation it's permitted. But it's true that he suffers pain, but the objective is not, your objective is not to derive pleasure from his pain. Your objective is a noble one. So there is a basis for this story. That's not, at least you think it's a noble one. Of course, whether it's truly noble or whether it's nasty, you know, it's a base. What you have to be on guard against is the base motives, which find a way of masking themselves behind, they disguise themselves behind the noble motive. Talmud Lomar Velosis Olachet. So therefore they conclude from this, the Prophet says, Velosis Olachet, that to me, in the same Prophet about being Mochiach, about rebuking, it says, lest you carry a sin. That is to say that the indication being that you too can become a sinner by virtue of the way in which you perform the rebuke. So Moshe is raising a good question. When the Rambam says that we're not permitted to use the methods of embarrassment, is it because really it's not the proper method? Even if it should succeed, it's not going to achieve. The real objective is to effectuate a change in the person. And there are different ways, you know. It's a big area in its own right. Now, there's no question that you can change people's behaviors through, you know, through emotional types of control. Even through embarrassment, you know, through pressure. You can change people's behavior through different types of pressures, whether it be religious pressure, you know, guilt, and so forth, and certainly through shame. The best way, I think everybody would agree, the best way to change a person's behavior is what? What's the best way?
The person should
do it himself. Yeah, why does he do it himself? Yeah, the best way is to really explain to the person why this is truly in his best interest. Because once a person sees, that's why knowledge is the basis, is the ultimate basis of ethical behavior. But by knowledge it means when a person knows the good, not just that he knows in an abstract sense, but doesn't really believe it, but his emotions, he has emotional conviction. When a person has an emotional conviction about the good, so then he really has no choice. Then he has to do it. Then he has to do it. Because a person is selfish by nature, the way a person is. There's no way you can get out of that. A person has to do it. He has no choice. He has to do that which is he believes is good for himself. I would say that there's no such thing as selfishness. People make a big mistake about this. Even when people describe themselves as being selfless, it's not true. Now, so the best way to get a person to change his behavior for the good is for him to see that this is in his own best interest. Because once he sees it it's in his own best interest, he's definitely going to do it. The reason why he's doing what he's doing right now is because he erroneously believes that his course of behavior is that which is best for himself. You see? That's why knowledge is the greatest tool in terms of ethics. But true knowledge is based upon true knowledge is the ultimate source of virtue. Now, therefore, what Moshe is saying is that, yeah, you can embarrass a person, and by embarrassing him, you can get him to change, because he, but that's not a real change, he's saying. The person is still the same person. It's just that he's not doing this activity because he doesn't want to suffer the embarrassment. But the internally, he's the very same person. And the objective is to change him as a person. You haven't succeeded. That would be a form of training. That's how you can even train animals, by rewarding them and punishing them. So they'll do a certain activity, but they're not doing that activity. What they really want is the reward that they're going to get, or what they really want is to avoid the pain. So that's what Moshe said. I'd like therefore to ask, is that what the Rambam means? Is that a true interpretation? Is the reason for this, the reason why the Rambam has said that you should not choose the method of embarrassing the person, is simply because that's not part of Tochacha? It doesn't qualify as being Tochacha. Or is there a different reason for it? Ask another question. Why, see, if we're going to take that approach, well, I mean, I was going to ask this question anyway, is the Rambam already has told us how you should be Machiach the person. In Halach HaZayin, he goes to great lengths to explain that you should do it in a very careful way. You should speak to him privately, you should speak to him in soft tones, and you should inform him that you're only doing it for his benefit. Well, that certainly would preclude embarrassing him. Isn't there a bit of a redundancy over here? What, now he tells us he should embarrass. Before, he's told us much more than that. Not only are you not permitted to embarrass him, but you have to go to the other extreme. You have to be very careful, solicitous of his feelings. So I was thinking to raise that question, that it does seem to be a bit superfluous, a bit redundant, unnecessary. We've gone further than that. This is minimal. Tell me that I can't embarrass him. More than that, I've got to be very careful. Okay. Okay, that's a good answer. So Moshe is answering and saying that in Halacha Zayin, the Rambam is mapping out the proper strategies. For the usual, in the normal case, in general. However, there are situations where that might not be the best approach, and where you might believe that embarrassing the person might work. Right? That's why he has to talk about tchess, I mean, in many different cases, not every case is the same. So what he means is, the Rambam therefore is not saying that you can't do it because it just doesn't work. There are cases where it might work. Otherwise he would have said that in Halacha Zayin. Halacha Zayin he's talking about the methods. But he's telling you a different point, that even if you should think that it would be successful, it still is going to be prohibited. It's a prohibition. And then, of course, we have to inquire as to what the reason for the prohibition is. And you still stay with what you most suggested before. The reason is because this is not considered a true change. A change which is based upon fear of embarrassment is not a true change. But what, that remains to be seen. Let's see if that's the case. Okay? He does say, if that's the case, he wouldn't need a pasuk. It says, "Velo sisa olav chayv," that it may very well be that this is effective, that it worked. Let's say you embarrass the person. This is a very important thing to remember, because people do tend to use this type of a method. You have to know where it's permitted, where it's not permitted. Let's say it worked. You can't say again, you know, that it never works. Sometimes it does work. Sometimes a person needed that, and he suffers a certain embarrassment, and that brings him back to his senses. I think you're right, though, in your observation, Moshe, that simply the pain of the embarrassment will not bring about lasting change. You know, that's not true change. That's reaction to a certain situation. Yeah, but I'll say, but it could bring about a temporary change, and then it can ignite within him those sparks. He'll start to think. He can start to think, and then it could be followed up by a genuine change. So it could be that you were successful. That as a result of your embarrassing him, he changed. He began to think the whole thing through, and then he made a real change. But had you not embarrassed him, then he would not have been motivated to think the thing through. So I can counter that. You see? So, but the Rambam says that if you choose this method, that's a chait. To embarrass another person is a chait. That's why you're not allowed to do it. is another thing. Let's get the facts clear here. Talmud Lomar, it says, "V'lo sizo alchek mikan from there she'asur la'adam la'achlum es Yisrael." It's prohibited for an individual to embarrass a fellow Jew. The chal shekem around, and how much more so if he does it publicly. So we have two different concepts. A, the concept of embarrassing a fellow Jew, which is even private. And he's saying, secondarily, of course, how much more so in public. So therefore, on the primary level, the prohibition exists, even beino or beinatmo, even privately, I have no right. Don't think that the Rambam means that if I'm rebuking you, I can't embarrass you publicly. There is such a thing as private embarrassment. Okay? That's what he's saying. There's a very important point over here, aside from the, just in terms of psychologically speaking, we do not, I believe that most people do not have a full and adequate appreciation of how serious a violation it is to inflict pain on another person with words. To embarrass a person, to hurt a person's feelings, is a issa d'oraisa. You're not allowed to do it. And even where in your own mind it's justified, where you just, because we always operate, you see, everybody's operating with a certain attitude. It's sort of like a tit-for-tat kind of an attitude. In other words, I treat the person the way he treats me. But you see that that's not the case in Judaism. Judaism doesn't accept that. You have a right to rebuke, but if a person hurt you, it does not confer upon you a right to treat him equally in kind. In other words, if he insulted you, that does not give you the right to insult him. And that's, like two wrongs don't make a right in that sense. You do have a right to rebuke him, but rebuke is an entirely different thing. And I think that's very, we don't, for two reasons. First of all, we tend to diminish, with regard to others, the significance of a verbal assault, offense. We tend to minimize it. I didn't really mean it, and so on and so forth. And also because it's not visible, we tend to diminish it. And as I said, also, a person feels a certain justification. If you got insulted, you feel that it's justice in giving it back. But it's a very serious, it's an Isser Dioraisa. Now he says like this, Afal Pisha Machlam Es Chavero, even though a person embarrasses Chaver, Eino Loka Olav. He doesn't get lashes. Even though he doesn't get lashes, Avon Gadolu. It's a very great sin. So you can't measure the seriousness of the sin by the fact that Bezdin doesn't give the punishment. There's no punishment because of it's a negative, it's a prohibition which doesn't have an action. That's a chapter principle in the law, in punishment. Kach Amru Chachamim, thus said the Chacham, Hamalbin Tenei Chaver Barabim, one who embarrasses his friend publicly, Ein Lo Chelek Le'olam Haba, he has no share in the world to come. Which means that it's one of the most serious sins in the entire Torah, because you lose your share in the world to come. L'fichach tzarech adam yizoher shlo levayesh chavero b'rabim. Therefore, a person should be very scrupulous not to embarrass his friend the rabbin. Interesting. Here, with regard to the seriousness of this, he mentions the rabbin publicly. In the first instance, with rebuke, he said that you're not allowed to embarrass him even privately, certainly the rabbin. Here, where he talks about the fact that you lose your share in the world to come, it's only if it is done publicly. It seems to be that. Of course, it's very bad if you do it privately, but when he speaks about losing your share in the world to come, that's when you do it barab, publicly. If you embarrass a person publicly, you lose your share in the world to come. Bear in mind, by the way, that of course means that you need to tshuva. Right? When the Rambam says this thing, he doesn't mean to say that it's beyond the tshuva, because the Rambam makes it very clear that no matter what the sin you've committed, in terms of the world to come, tshuva will help for any sin. But he means there's different kinds of sins. There are certain types of sins that in and of themselves, even if you didn't do tshuva, do not cause you to leave the world to come. Okay, they count as a sin, and God measures the sins against mitzvot, the merit, etc. But here there are certain sins that in and of themselves will cause you to lose the world to come. That, of course, is if it remains a sin, that you didn't do tshuva. You have to do tshuva. Now, let's continue. Therefore, a person must be careful not to embarrass somebody publicly. Bein katan, bein gadol, whether it be a katan or a gadol. Of course, the question is, why does the Rambam have to mention that? What's the difference in you and me? Well, I did only adult, whether it's a child or an adult. The Rambam makes a point of that. Interesting point. V'lo yikrilo b'shein shehu bosh b'menu, and he shouldn't call him by a name which he is embarrassed by. Right? But, like people like to do that, to use a name. It doesn't mean you can't use a nickname, of course. If the person is not embarrassed by it, it's fine. But, you know, there are certain names that, derogatory kind of names. I don't know why the Rambam has to single that out is very interesting. The question over there would be, isn't it part of the, what's the difference? Of course, you've already told me that you can't embarrass them. Below you stop in the front of Davarshu Boshmanim. Nor may he discuss in front of him a matter which he finds embarrassing. What does that mean? You can't discuss in front of him a matter which he finds embarrassing. In other words, when you drama here means when you're not directly embarrassing. Mm-hmm. When you're not directly embarrassing, but the subject matter, you know, if a person just got out of jail and because of whatever, some kind of scam, insider trading, whatever the case may be, and you're in a group of people, and there's a case in the paper, and you bring up that subject. Not about him, but you know the person is going to be squirming, because it focuses attention. Of course, the first thing that comes to mind is that this guy was guilty of the exact same thing. So it's an indirect way of focusing attention on that which is embarrassing to this person. So you're not even allowed to do it in that way. That's what he means. By discussing something which he would be embarrassed about. Okay?
This is deliberate.
Well, of course it's deliberate in the sense that you're only liable for things that you did deliberately. If you had no idea, for example, you had no idea that there's somebody in the room
with a runaway, actually.
I one time gave a shiur about Yosef in jail. And why Yosef, even though he was sold as a slave, which was part of the providence, and nevertheless, it was providential, but he should wind up in jail. He was accused by the wife of Potiphar. And I tried to show that was also necessary in terms of his perfection. Because there's a Rashi over there that says that once he began to raise himself up in the house of Potiphar, so then he went back to sort of his ways of vanity, began to become involved in his appearance and so on and so forth. And that was wrong because Rashi says, because your father is in mourning, it showed a lack of identification with the pain of his father. Your father is in mourning, and you're involved in your appearance and your self-indulgence. So Chazal say he sicked upon him the bear, so to speak, meaning the wife of Potiphar. So that he had to go through another period now of pain. He had to do more work on himself. He had not yet perfected himself. So I was talking about the effect of prison and how prison affected for prison. And then afterwards someone told me there was an individual in the shir over there who had just got out of jail. He said, and I was looking right at him, because I don't remember. That was clearly by accident, because I didn't really even know who he was. Nor that he had just gotten out of prison. And when a person sits in prison, you know, we start thinking this and that, like I was like making a big deal out of that whole thing, how prison affects a person, his mentality, and so forth. And the individual pointed it out to me, said, it just seemed like you were looking at the guy. The whole time you were mentioning prison, this guy just got out of jail, a big scam and so forth. So such a case, obviously, there's no, yeah, no, I had no idea. I certainly wasn't looking at him. He seemed to be quite a sturdy individual anyways. He didn't seem to feel bad. He didn't get up and walk out. But that's irrelevant. Even if that's the case, if that's not your fault, I mean, if you're talking about a subject, you have no way of knowing that it's going to
hurt somebody else's feelings for whatever reason, then that's not the case. But we're talking where you knowingly bring up the subject. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. Because this is one of the greatest enjoyments, as I've mentioned, is to perceive the suffering of other people. That's a tremendous enjoyment that we have. Especially if you can feel righteous about it at the same time.
Why is that?
Because there's one thing, though, that unconsciously you're walking around with a certain feeling of being special, of being important, that your existence is more important than the scheme of things. And you can't acknowledge that openly. That's a childhood feeling. A child feels that he's the most important being in the world, and everything revolves around him. That's what's referred to as a narcissism, self-love. But of course, as you get each person, that's why a person is compelled to achieve things. And when he achieves things, he wants credit, he wants recognition, he wants that idea that he has of himself to be universally recognized. Now, there are little ways, and that's why, for example, people can't tolerate even, you know, conversely, when you're the victim, the pain that you feel is way out of proportion to the actual event itself. It's a breakdown. You know? That's why, by the way, the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim is so important. The mitzvah to visit the sick, to comfort, to console the sick, it says that the Chazal say it takes away like 1/60th of the illness. What does it mean it takes away 1/60th? It's a funny formulation. It means that there's two types of suffering. One is purely from the physical itself. That is not necessarily, and that's not going to be helped. The fact that a person has a cold or whatever he has, the pain, is not going to make a difference if you visit him or not. But beyond that, it's a breakdown. It's like there's always that thing that you feel that this shouldn't be happening to you because you're special. And it's unfair, whatever. It's a breakdown of your feeling of self-love. So therefore, when somebody else comes to visit you and shows that you are important to him, significant, it's a restoration. That's why it's a big mitzvah. A person's very vulnerable. When he's sick, he's very vulnerable. You tend to underestimate. Like, a lot of times you figure, like, you're not really that close with the person. It's not even, you know, a lot of times in my own mind, like, I can't imagine that it would be important to that person to see me. But yet, when you go, you really, tremendous appreciation. Because the person is more vulnerable and he's more in need of that feeling of that people like him and he's worth him and so forth because he suffered a breakdown. He suffered, I'm not saying a nervous breakdown, a breach in his self-love. And that's the gain. The gain is that this thing happened to somebody else. Oh, because you're always comparing yourself to others. It's a relative type of phenomenon. Oh, it happened to them. I'm the one that's fake. It didn't happen to me. It didn't happen to me is not a negative, it's a positive. The restoration of that feeling of being special, being superior. He's aggressive by nature, and the aggressiveness is based upon the fact that he's self-centered, egocentric. And the egocentricity manifests itself in an irrational belief that you are unique in the scheme of things. And the whole point of the Torah, the Alfa Rech Hamotha, is to show you that you're unique only in the sense that that God relates to you, to your existence, because you have a Tzelem Elokim. But insofar as that is concerned, the very same factor applies to all the other beings in the creation. That's what the Gemara in Brachos, one of the great rabbis, said. I'm a creature and my friend is a creature. We're both the same. The sense of importance is only due to the fact that we exist because of the will of God. And the will of God relates to me, and that endows me with rights. That very same will endows the other a person with the same rights as me. I'm not superior to them in any way. Please ask a very good question. That according to this, then, the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim is one of the greatest mitzvahs. It's the part of going and walking in the ways of God, so to speak. Because God is Malach HaKhola. That is to say, in a sense, obviously, when God visited, so to speak, Abraham, you know, when he was recuperating from the certainty. So it's a great to show us, in other words, to demonstrate where our perfection is in line with copying the ways, so to speak, the ways that God has revealed to us through his interaction with mankind, the proper ways of perfection, and we're to imitate those ways. And Bikur Cholim is one of them. So So Ellie is saying, but there really doesn't seem like such a great mitzvah if we're presupposing that there's a certain innate enjoyment in witnessing somebody else's suffering. So then, A, it's not such a great mitzvah, and B, it's catering to certain emotions. So that's a good question. So Moshe is saying that that it's not really a problem, because what is one thing after the other? The fact that the mitzvah is easy is not detract from his greatness. That's the point. Okay, the premise of Ellie is the popular notion that we've all been raised with, and that is that the greatness of the mitzvah, to a certain extent, has to do with the pain that one experiences. It's something that you're doing something which goes against your nature; it's painful to you, and that's the fum sara agra, according to the pain is the reward. That type of an idea, and therefore, something which is easy to do, it can't be that great a mitzvah. That seems to be the popular philosophy. Now Moshe is questioning that, but before, what do you say to that? I think there's some truth in the popular notion if it's understood properly. And there's another side which says that the mitzvah should be really easy. There's another side. That's the pasuk that Moshe said, the Atzi Yisrael. And now, O Israel, more do Hashem lakecha dorish meimah. What is it the Lord of God requests of you? But the pasuk is Moshe sort of rebuked Israel and says, what is? And now, what does the Lord require of you, except to fear Him and to serve Him and so forth, for your benefit all the days? Something to that effect. He summarizes, well, what's the big deal? If all God wants that you should fear Him and serve Him and keep His statutes and commandments, and this is all for your good. In other words, he's saying, what is the big deal? It's a perfect God gave you a Torah. You see the Torah. It's a beautiful Torah. It's in line with your nature, and it's a fear God, the love God. This is the most sensible thing in the world. The Gemara asked the question. Just by the way he expressed it, the Chidav is Utenu, is this a small thing? Like the Gemara studies the parasha and questions and says, what's going on over here? What does Moshe mean? Is it a simple thing to keep the Torah? It's very difficult to keep the Torah. So the Gemara says, yeah, for Moshe it was a small thing. And no, it does indicate, it seems to indicate that Moshe was a little bit off in the criticism, because he hadn't fully assessed, he couldn't imagine. See, when a person is on a level of perfection, so then he can't imagine, how could a person not keep the Torah? See? Yeah. Because he reaches that level, when you reach that level of understanding, you see right. That this is the way of perfection, you can't imagine why a person would do it any differently.
Right.
It's like in any area, in any field, if you've worked at a methodology, and a mechanic, an engineer, and so forth, and the way to do it most efficiently and put it together, and then you're trying to teach people this method, and you see people are doing it differently because it goes against their emotion, and you're trying to show them you're following your emotion and you're making your life somewhat that's more difficult. So many problems emerge from that. If you would just get out of that and look at it logically, you'll see how much better it is. But that goes against, you see, so then in your framework you have to do it for you that way. It's the perfect system. Yeah, but that's true of Moshe Rabbeinu. So that would seem to support your point, Moshe. Right? That you see from that the when a person's the easier it is for the person, the greater the mitzvah, the greater the degree of perfection. And we have contrary references. On the one hand, there's the statement of Lafum Sara Agra, there's the popular notion, which is backed up by the statement that it goes according to the pain. And that's your question. On the other hand, what Moshe is saying is that no, the fact that you love to do the mitzvah and it's not painful, that shows that you're very perfected. What's the resolution? How would you resolve it? As long as we're not perfected, is Eli correct that we should say that the mitzvah of Bikachol is not such a great mitzvah? I disagree. I'm saying it is. It is a big mitzvah. Because you have to understand, the mitzvah of Bikachol is not to doesn't satisfy that emotion if it's done properly. Because the mitzvah has a tzura to it. It has certain requirements. It's visiting the sick, like any other mitzvah, it's not just you go to the hospital and you left. You didn't fulfill the mitzvah. The mitzvah is really to put yourself at the disposal of the other individual. That's why you can't just go whenever you feel when it's convenient for you. The Gemara brings, you know, the halacha brings down certain times of the day when the, you know, when the sickness is more painful to the individual. If you know that he's uncomfortable and doesn't want to be seen in that state, then you can't go, because the only purpose of going, the only purpose of going is to alleviate you. It's really a humbling experience, because you're there to the say, for the, if you didn't go there for that purpose, to alleviate the other person's sense of distress. In other words, your emotion, the question of asking is that we sort of have an emotion where we sort of enjoy the other person's distress. You see, if that's the case, then you can't fulfill the mitzvah properly, because the entire objective of the mitzvah is to relieve that distress. That's why you have to go at the right time, and that's why the mitzvah is to encourage him, to find the correct word to encourage him, make him feel good about himself. And also you have to ask, you have to get his needs. You're going to ask him if there's anything he needs, if you know that there's certain food. So therefore you're again humbling yourself, which is breaking down your own. You have to go out shopping and get him the type of thing that he would like. So you have to be thinking about somebody else's. And also you have to be misfollowful. Of course, if you're obligated to ask him what is it that he would like. I mean, if he doesn't need anything, of course that's fine. But to fulfill the mitzvah properly is to satisfy, to take care of his needs. So you're putting yourself at his disposal, and to restore his feeling, you know, to make him feel better about himself, you know, to uplift his spirits. So therefore, that's not what the emotion is being attracted to. And I would say that that's why there's a lot of perfection given until you reach the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. The level of Moshe Rabbeinu is a different level. But given the ordinary nature of man, it fits in perfectly with this. It breaks down that narcissism. It goes against your brain, because you really don't want to be involved in somebody else. You want to be involved in your own thing. And the fact that he's in the hospital, that's where you get the thing. If you just sit back, if you hear that somebody else in the hospital and you have this emotion, you still have this emotion that you get a certain pleasure out of somebody else's pain, so then that's enough. Let him sit in the hospital. Yeah, let him be there. I don't have to go out of my way. You know, let him be in the hospital. He's out of the picture. He's a loser. That's the emotion. So the mitzvah says that no, that you have to be involved in this. You have to identify. That's precisely. You see, the emotion is you don't want to identify with the suffering. You want to say, that can happen to him, can't happen to me. The mitzvah demands that you identify with that suffering. That means, yes, this could very well happen to me. That's the breakdown of that emotion. So it's lehepach, you see? That's why it's a very great mitzvah, if it's done properly. And that's why it is counter. It goes counter to that emotion, which we were talking about. The pasuk is in... The pasuk is in Devarim Yud Aleph. Excuse me. Perik Yud. That's Perik Yud 10, verse 12. The Ati Yisrael, and now Israel. Lord Hashem Lekecha Shalimra. What is it that God is asking of you? Ki im li yira, as of Hashem Lekecha, but only to fear the Lord your God. Lo leches b'chol d'racha, to walk in all of His ways. Uliyava also, and to love Him. V'lava as of Hashem Lekecha, and to serve. To serve the Lord your God, b'chol levavcha, with all of your heart, but b'chol nafshecha, and all of your soul. Not much. That's the sense. That's the sense in which the Chazal understood it. What is Ma'ariv Shemotecha? What's God asking of you? What do you mean, what's God asking of you? How many people do you know that are fulfilling this? This is everything. This is perfection. Well, the answer is, Moshe Rabbeinu was not, he couldn't conceive of a different way of living. Because he was so in line, he was so perfected, he was so in line with the true ideas of Torah that he had to do it. The best way to perfect yourself and to perfect others is through knowledge and understanding, because you're a selfish being by nature, and you can only do that which is good for yourself. Therefore, all evil stems from the fact that you have a false idea of the good. Whenever a person is doing the wrong thing, in his own mind, he's doing it because he thinks he's profiting by it. So So he believes that the man can only operate with the sense of the good. And therefore, evil occurs when a person has a false idea of what the good is. And the whole point of the Torah is to show you what the real good is for man. But that requires a thought and understanding. But once you see it clearly, then there's no way you can sin. Because your selfishness will force you to do the good thing, and you have to. No person is going to walk away from the good. The only reason you walk away from the good, the only reason people give up, people on the Chol Shabbos, is because they're not convinced that that is the good. They're convinced that success, and fame, and money, or whatever it is they're going after, that is the good. That is the good. And the Moshe of the Rambam says is sort of, must be viewed as almost in a class. He's part of the human species, but he's in a class by himself. And in that class, like a separate species. In that species, he's the only being of that species. Now, he reached a certain level that no other being could ever reach. Now, why that is so...
Why can't someone else reach the same level?
I'm saying that the Torah tells us that no one ever will.
Oh,
yeah, the factors that were necessary, I mean, part of it was God's will to produce such a being, even though Moshe had Bechira, but that combination of factors that were necessary to produce a Moshe Rabbeinu. Of course, Moshe had to exercise the Bechira. But even if you exercise the Bechira, you have certain inherent limitations. Right? So the faculties that were necessary, it was God's will that there should be a being that would reach that level. Apparently will not be duplicated, and that's it. Now why it was God's will that there only be one Moshe and not another one, I can't answer that question. We're dealing with the Rambam in Perek Vav. That's chapter 6, paragraph 8, where he talks about Mochiach, rebuking someone. So we've already established that in doing so, you're not allowed to speak harshly with him, lest you embarrass him. You know, you're not allowed to embarrass him, and if you do so, then it's a chet, because there's a low sisal of chet. So you see from this that you're not permitted to embarrass anyone. And that's speaking even if it's private, even if it's not a public. Embarrassment is not defined by the public. It's by evoking a certain feeling in the other individual. From here we learn out, she'asli adam lahach b'mas Yisrael, but it's prohibited for someone to embarrass a Jew. The culture came around. How much more so in public? Yeah, but the primary prohibition is even if it's not public. Now the first thing we wanted to know was why the Rambam mentioned that in Ches that you shouldn't speak harshly with him and so forth, when it seems to be redundant, because in Zion he had already said that you should speak in private and you should speak softly and so forth, right? So because, and we explained that that's, you have to understand the since it's a mitzvah, every mitzvah has to be done in the proper way, otherwise it's not going to be effective. So you have to know how to carry out tochacha. This seems to be redundant, he said. So certainly you shouldn't embarrass him. It goes against everything he said. So why is he adding now that you're not allowed to embarrass him? That was the first question. But let's proceed. He then says, "Achavishem amachlan eschavero, ain't a loco love." Even though one who embarrasses his friend doesn't get malchus, avon gadol, it is a great sin. Chacham chacham, thus said the chacham. The wise men said, "Hamalvin pene chaver v'rabim, one who embarrasses his friend in public, ain't lo chelak l'olam haba." Does not have a share in the world to come. So this indicates that it's one of the most serious crimes. Lefichach tzarech adam lehizoher shelo levayish chaver v'rab. Therefore, a person must be careful not to embarrass his friend in publicly. Bein katan, whether it be a child. Bein gadol, whether it be an adult. Nor should he call him by a name
which he is embarrassed by. Nor should he discuss a subject matter which would cause him embarrassment. Okay, let's pause there for a moment. Now, once the Rambam tells you, we could ask ourselves this question. Once the Rambam tells you that it's a very serious chait, and that it's one for which you would lose your olam haba, is there any need to go further? So what does he have to say? Therefore, you should be careful. I mean, you've already told me enough. That's all I need to know, basically. Is that I'm sure that anyone, any Jew who takes the Torah seriously on any level, and even someone who's not that scrupulous in various things, he may be a little bit more lenient, doesn't take things so seriously, but if you tell him, you better be careful what you're doing. You could lose your olam haba. That will grab his attention. Every Jew is concerned about that. Nobody's going to lose his olam. So once the Rambam has told us that to embarrass somebody publicly would cause you to lose your olam haba, why does he have to proceed and say, therefore, lehizahir, you should be so careful? Of course you're going to be careful. And why does he have to give those particular examples that he gives? Mentions whether it's a katan, whether it's a gadol, you shouldn't call him by a name. I mean, all these things seem to be redundant. Obviously, you told me I'm not allowed to embarrass him, so I can't rack him out. I can't call him by a name. Like a dope, call him stupid or something like that. Which is, obviously, we know that. So that's something we also have to take into consideration. Okay, but there's one further issue over here in this Rambam. If you go further, he says something which is very, very astounding. He then says, when do I say this? He has a qualification, a qualifier. In matters which are between Adam l'chavero. That means to say, what does it mean by Adam l'chavero over here? You figure that out. Of all the divrei shemayim, but in matters that concern heaven, in lo chazav al v'seser, there too you have to first rebuke him privately. But if he didn't do tshuva in private, then you can embarrass him publicly, and publicize the sin, and degrade him up to his face. You can embarrass him and curse him until he returns to the good. There it seems to be, not only is it permitted, but you go to the fullest extent of public humiliation, embarrassment, and cursing from him. You wipe the floor with him publicly, make mincemeat out of him. Kemoshe also call on Nevi'im v'Yisrael. He says, as all the Nevi'im, if you read the prophets, you see how they rebuke the Jews, and they condemn the Jews, and they criticize the Jews publicly. That's why they were always in danger for their lives. But this becomes very... If you're telling me that this is the worst sin and it causes you to lose your Ein Lochel Yolam Haba, so why should it make any difference? And we're saying that in the framework of Hocheir Tochiach, you know, I'll do it. So what's the reason behind making this the breakdown? That is to say that that's only when it's matters concerning you and your friend. But if it's Tivrei Shemayim, then it's a totally different picture. Why is it a different picture? So those are all the issues. Question number one, what is the reason that you're not allowed to embarrass the person in the process of Elchayah Tochiyah? Okay, what's the reason for that? And why is that a chiddush? If you're going to tell me that, because it's not effective in order to cause somebody to want to make up, to receive the tochacha, to receive it, it's not going to work. If that's what you're telling me, well, that seems to be redundant, because the Rambam has already told you that you should be very careful. The second question was that the Rambam proceeds to say that one who humiliates someone publicly doesn't have a share in the world to come. So we have to understand why that is so severe. Why is it on the surface, that is a problem, because if you were to ask an audience in general that wasn't familiar with this, what their opinion is in the scale of things, how serious a avera this is, would it warrant the loss of Olam Haba? I don't think so. I think most people would say it's not right, it's, you know, because emotionally people feel that it's wrong. But probably no one likes it. So when you have something that nobody likes, then they all agree that it's wrong. But I don't, but again, at the same time, this type of thing happens pretty frequently, and people usually, in one way or another, are involved in this type, or guilty of embarrassing people at certain points in their life, and therefore they don't think it's. On the other hand, I don't think people would say that a person should lose his share in the world of time. It's that terrible. Yeah, I didn't hurt him. I didn't hit him. I didn't kill him. I didn't killing a person. That's torturing. I didn't torture him. On the other hand, it doesn't seem to be, as in the ordinary person's understanding, as serious as the Torah is making it out to be. And finally, then we have to ask ourselves why the Rambam, having told us that, proceeded to say that a person should be very careful, and he gives these examples, not to talk about a subject that he would be embarrassed about. Why does he have to give these particulars? And why does he have to mention that we have to be cautious? If you told me I'm going to lose my Olam Haba, so I know I have to be cautious. Right? And finally, we have to ask ourselves, why is everything, if it's that terrible, so why is it that it's only when you're mochiach and in matters that are between you and him, but if it's in matters between divrei shamayim, then you're permitted to pull out all the stops and embarrass him publicly and humiliate him and so forth. But why should that, if it's us, it should be prohibited in all cases. The truth is, it is necessary to tell us to be careful in this area. Think about it. Just from practical experience. It's a very powerful emotion. A very powerful emotion that everybody has within him, which can lead him very easily into a situation of embarrassing others. And not even intending to do so in a bad way. But nevertheless doing so. You see? There's a reason for this. Because it goes back to what we were discussing, the aggressive component in man, which is rooted in the egotistical, that each person wants to be the focus of attention. This, and therefore, once he has that feeling, so everyone, it causes him to look at his friends in a different light. Everyone else is basically competing with him for that same thing, so he sort of wants to get above the crowd. So, in doing so, see, the reason why an individual doesn't recognize this embarrassment as being as serious as hurting a person, even though it's more serious, is because a person basically is in a state of conflict. He has aggressive tendencies, and the aggressive tendency is really to inflict harm. The aggressive instinct, as we don't see it in its, you know, in its pristine form, because it's been subject to a lot of changes, you know, repressions and so forth. So, because we can't acknowledge the true nature of our aggressiveness, you can get a glimpse of it, by the way, in dreams. If you never interpret your dreams, and you find you have one of these dreams where you find yourself hacking, killing someone, hacking, doing it, and then you feel horribly guilty about it, and then it's a dream. But then you say, that's not me, I could never do it. Well, who is it? I mean, it's your own psyche. It's got to be a part of you that produced that dream. It didn't fly in from outside. It's you, because that is the way the instinct is. In dreams you have a glimpse of the instincts as they are in their true state, not in their repressed, sublimated, refined, but that if you take away all the refinements and get to see what it's like. Now, in the normal situation, a person has aggressiveness. On the other hand, there are very powerful counter forces in terms of guilt. So he's always looking for an opportunity to express it in a manner that it doesn't bring forth the guilt. That's why humor is a very attractive thing. All humor is aggression. And the reason why, you see, comedians have to be careful. In the guise of humor, you can make fun out of different groups. You know, everything is making fun out of something, out of someone, out of some people. If it's done in a funny kind of a way, so that it provides the cover, people will laugh. If it's not done properly, then it's just pure naked aggression and people won't laugh. The same thing. See, it's got, it's very careful. It's right here. Yeah, exactly. And the disguise is the...